Thanks, Adrian. Wasn't that worship really good, eh? I so agree with Adrian. We are so blessed that we can be in church. Many parts of the world, there's so much struggle going on, and here we are just able to gather and just fill up this place and just give him glory, and it's just so good. Just one thing I'd like to say before I share the word today, God's put on my heart. There's been a lot of new people join our church in the last couple of years, and there's something we've sort of been wanting to do, and probably gets delayed with different things that come, but we're going to have a new people's night on the 13th of next month, on Saturday night. So I think over the last maybe 2 years, there's been like about 40 or more people or something join our church. So if you're here and you're new and you've come in the last year or two and you'd like to come along just to a night, we'd just like to share, you know, where our church comes from, its roots, maybe things about how church works for us, our vision, meet some of the team and the ministries that do stuff in our church. Just invite you to come along. I'll send out a text or let people know more, but if you can just lock that date in, the 13th of February. So keep that in mind. We're doing a series, as Adrian said, called Revive Us. Look pretty revived in here today. That's one thing. It felt revived. It was really good. So much about, you know, dry bones coming alive, resurrection, just sensing God in the house. It's just so good. I've been thinking about this word. I've been thinking about it a lot the last month. And I thought, you know, what does it look like to be revived? And how do we get revived? I've got a little thing that came to my heart. You might have something God spoke to you, but this is what he spoke to me. You know, revive simply means to restore back to life. Something that was dead, something that was maybe dying or dry, God touched it or something happened, it was restored back to life. What sort of set me on this thought, about a month ago, Debbie and I went up to Toowoomba for three days. Now, I've often gone up there. Not that I've ever lived up there, but my family roots are up there. I actually got a picture of me leaning on a street called Garth Road, you know, and because there's my great-great-grandparents after the gold rush, they came for the gold. I'm not sure exactly where, but they found themselves eventually probably trying to do a farm in Toowoomba. And so I often like going up there, and I really love the Darling Downs, it's called. And I love all those little towns there, and I've done some little bit of work up there through the years. But it often you go up there, it's really good when it's good. And there's other times it just looks, you're driving through bits and it can look a bit dry. And it can look a bit, a little bit dry. Anyway, I was up there this time with Deb, and I was just amazed how green it was. It was absolutely lush. Just Kiwis, put your hands over your ears. It was even nearly as good as New Zealand, you know? Anyway, it was beautiful. Everywhere was lush green. We went through a drive and there was little showers. There was a storm one night. I just loved driving through the countryside. Just loved chatting in the car to Deb, stopping for a coffee or something. And that's it for me. But it was really good. Lush green, and I thought, what happened? What happened in Toowoomba? What happened to these little hills and these plains? What happened? I'll tell you what happened. It was a simple thing. Water happened. Water happened. It rained. We've had so much rain. Water revives. It brings dead things back to life. Dead, dry places are revived by water. Even look out at your backyard lately. How many times have you been mowing that lawn? I probably have to mow mine again today. Water is the X factor, isn't it? It makes the difference. You know, you can go out, fertilize your lawn, you can do all sorts of things, you can go growing crops, you can plant seed, but if you ain't got water, you're not going anywhere. It changes everything. And what I'd like to say today is being revived is all about water. It's all about water. where there's a lack of water, everything gets dry. You know, dry is dangerous. Eventually, it'd be like when Pete came up to share, we got dry bones. Eventually, you get so dry, you die. I heard a preacher sharing, and he was saying about the story that Jesus said when the demon went out of a man. It said it went wandering about in dry places. You know, you get too dry, and the enemy's giving you a hard time as well. You go without water physically, and in 3 days, you're probably not here. All life depends on water. I was hearing someone else say in some of these large cattle farms that are around our country, they're just too big to have a fence. So what do? They get surveyors in and they plot water holes in strategic places because the cattle will not stray too far from the water. You know, we do not live without water. We do not survive without water. We do not get revived without water. And the Bible is full of these metaphors. They're everywhere. You know, you start looking for them, they're everywhere. About water, about being dry, and about being thirsty. First one that always comes to my mind is Psalm 63. It says, "O God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you as in a dry and weary land where there is no water." You know, we have a vision as a church up there. It says transforming our community through the love and power of Jesus. You know, transformation is a water thing too. You want to transform our lives, you want to transform a city, you want to transform a nation, we need water. I'll just read you a quick thing in Isaiah. We're not sharing from there, but the picture in here of what water does. This is in Isaiah 35. It says, "The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and blossom like a rose." I'm not sure it's got crocos in mind, but it's a flower of sorts. "It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. Strengthen the weak hands." This looks like something getting revived. "Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who have an anxious heart, be strong, fear not." This is something's getting revived here. "Behold, your God will come with vengeance and with recompense of God. He will come and save you. He will deliver you. He will make the difference," like Adrian shared today. It says, "Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened." Sounds like revival to me. "And the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute sing for joy." This is why. This is why all this happens. It says, "For waters break forth in the wilderness." It's a water thing. It's a water thing. My passage today is from John. We're all going to know this well, but I just want to look at it afresh today from John 7, verse 37 to 39. Brenton might put the verses up. I forgot to mention them at the start, but you all know it well. I'll just read it to you. John 7, verse 37. It says, "On the last day of the feast, the great day, Jesus stood up and cried out, 'If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water.' Now this he said about the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were to receive, for as yet the Spirit had not been given because Jesus had not been glorified." The context of this is there was a feast. Jesus turns up at a feast in Jerusalem. It was called the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Huts. It was one of the three great feasts of the Jewish calendar. Every male was compelled to go to these feasts. And they estimated this time probably 1 million people were in Jerusalem and camped around the hills for this great feast. It got its name from a tradition that during the festival, people were asked to leave their homes and live in rough tents or booths. In the law, the booths were not permanent structures, but they were made of branches and ferns. The roofs of these booths were just like thatched roofs, but they were open enough that you could see the stars. And these booths would spring up everywhere, on roofs, house roofs, in streets, in gardens, city squares, even in the temple. And it was interesting. My mind went back to when I was 20. I had a friend who'd come to know the Lord in a Catholic community called Emmanuel. It was over in Baden. And they used to keep this, some of these Jewish traditions, and they used to keep this Feast of Booths. Not sure exactly why, but they kept it. And I remember rocking up for a meal, and instead of being in the house where it was about 12 guys, we're all out in the backyard in some booth, and they're all celebrating this feast. Well, this is what it was like. And for the Jews, it had rich historical significance. The people were enacting and remembering the years when they wandered through the desert, and they were without a home and without a roof over their heads. And they would remember how God would provide for them. They would remember his faithfulness. They probably would remember about Moses when the time that they were without water, and they began to grumble and they began to moan and they wished they were back in Egypt, and they began to complain. And Moses called on God, and God said to go and speak to the rock that the water would come out. And Moses got a little bit out of his place and went and hit the rock, but still the water came out. And they were remembering how God, in every place that they were in, during those 40 years after they were delivered until they came into the promised land, they would remember how God provided for them while they dwelt in tents. They had this one ritual during this feast. Every day, the people would come to the temple with their palm branches, and they would use them to form a roof above the altar, and they would march around the great altar. At the same time, the priests would take pitchers or jugs, and these jugs could hold about a liter of water, and they would go out in, they would go back in towards the city. They would go to what was the pool of Siloam, and they would fill them with water, and they would carry it back through the water gate. And the people would be singing songs, you know, songs like "With joy we will draw water from the wells of salvation." You know, some of the songs that we sing. They would sing these songs as they enacted, and they remembered their time in the wilderness. And the water was carried to the altar, and it was poured out as an offering to God. And the whole ceremony, they would just relive and reenact and think back what God had done. And they would remember that without God providing water for them, they would not have survived. The tradition is that there was verses that they read. Just think of some of the ones that you would think they'd read. Well, this is some of the ones they believe they read, like Ezekiel, who prophesied about this. He said, "Then he brought me back to the door of the temple, and behold, water was issuing from below the threshold of the temple." They were enacting this, they were remembering back, and they were looking forward to Ezekiel's promise that water would come into the temple. They looked forward to what Zechariah said. He said, "On that day, living waters shall flow from Jerusalem. half of them to the eastern sea and half of them to the western sea, and it shall continue summer and winter, an endless supply of water it would be, and the Lord will be king over all the earth. I was thinking about that song we sang, you know, where all heaven held their breath when that stone was rolled away. You know, I'm looking forward to the next time heaven holds its breath when Jesus comes back and every grave is going to give up its dead, you know. I tell you, that's heaven will hold its breath again. Well, these guys were looking forward to what God was going to do. He was going to be king over all the earth. And at that time, Jerusalem, coming from the house of God, it's saying, would be this water, this endless supply. Because their belief was that the water, the living water, would come out of this temple. It would come from this place. It would come from Jerusalem. It would bring life to all the earth. They saw the temple as like the belly of the earth. It was like the center of the world. That was their belief. But really, it was, they also were looking to this future. It said in Isaiah, Isaiah would say, "For I will pour water on a thirsty land and streams on the dry ground. I will pour my spirit upon your offspring and my blessing on your descendants." You know, this, there's this water thing and then there's this spirit thing. You know, that they are connected. They are connected. And I was thinking back to Genesis. You know, you go right back to the start when it says the earth was without form and without void. Sounds like it's pretty dead, doesn't it? And it says the Spirit of God was hovering or resting over the waters of the earth. You know, there's something about the Spirit and water. They so go together. In Isaiah, he also said, "Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And he who has no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price." It's against all this backdrop, against all this going on, against this event is going on 7 days, day after day. They're pouring out this water and they're remembering and they're picturing it and they're singing songs and they're reading scriptures and they just got all this running through their heart and through their minds. And it says against this backdrop, right at the very end of the feast, on the 8th day, Jesus gets up. And he cries out. This isn't just some little speech. This is, you know, the word in here, the Greek word in here is like a huge shout. He shouts it out. He says, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water." They're looking to a temple. And he's pointing them to him, you know. He's pointing them to him. And out, he says, "Come to me." I tell you, I just meditated on this last night and I was singing a song that we're going to wind up with at the end. And I was just thinking, God, I'm longing for this. This is not something quiet. This is a massive shout. You know, Jesus says, "If anyone thirsts." You know, Jesus speaks to the core of every human heart with these words. All of us are thirsty. Every one of us. I need a drink of water. Just talking about it. I tried to find a video clip, you know, and they had this one of people drinking all sorts of drinks and cold drinks, and they just had this thing at the start. You will be thirsty watching this, you know. I'm talking about this and I'm getting thirsty. I'm getting thirsty. I was singing this song last night and I thought, God, I'm thirsty. God, I'm thirsty. Every human heart, every human soul thirsts for satisfaction. People have an inbuilt internal thirst, a void, a nagging, that an emptiness that nags them all through their life till they come to Jesus, till they come to him. This, you know, that thirst is so real, and I tell you, it's not pleasant. Going without water for too long is not pleasant. Living a life without Jesus is not pleasant. We get thirsty. Jesus says, let him come to me and drink. To the inner thirst of every human soul, Jesus makes, doesn't tell us, oh, you got to do this. He doesn't give us a list of rules. He doesn't give us a whole lot of stuff. He makes an invitation to us. Don't you love him? Don't you love him for this? Jesus gets us. He knows how we're made. He knows what makes us tick. He knows how we're wired. He gets us. He knows and he sees that people are thirsty. I bet you he's looking around for 7 days at all these Jews doing this ritual, hearing these prophetic words that he knows that speak of him and what he's going to bring and how the Spirit of God is going to be outpoured on the face of the earth. And he's thinking, you're missing it, you're missing it. You got to come to me. He gets us. And to every human heart, he doesn't put any shame on us for being thirsty, doesn't embarrass them. The issue is for Jesus that he knows only he can satisfy the heart of every thirsty soul, and he invites them to come to him. He talks about this back in John. Remember the woman in the well, the woman that was by the well? He said to her, whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. You'll never have that nagging thirst that you had before once you come to Jesus. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Wow, what a promise. Jesus, you know, God made us thirsty, and only he can satisfy our thirst. The prophets continually warned Israel about looking elsewhere to satisfy their thirst. You think about all the things that the prophets did. All they did was call the people back to the covenant, calling them back to God and making it clear to them that they had strayed and they'd gone and tried to satisfy their thirst somewhere else. They'd gone to idols and they'd gone to the other nations' gods instead of coming to him. Jeremiah said, for my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters. He's our fountain. He's our supply. He's the only one that quenches our thirst. He's the only one that satisfies our thirst. He's the only one that'll stop that nagging sense in our heart where we're dry and we're in a dry land. He's the one that satisfies our thirst. And it says, and they have hewed out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns, like containers of water that were broken, it said, that can hold no water. Everything else leaks, but Jesus satisfies the thirst of our soul, and all he asks, he says, let him come. Let him come. You know, I just love that. I love it that Jesus just tells me, just come. Just, you know, it's like that old song, just how you are, just as you are, come. Digging my own wells was never a good recipe for success. But coming to Jesus was the answer to every need I had. We're all born with this inner thirst, and it's only satisfied with coming to Jesus. You know, what are we actually thirsty for? What is the human heart actually thirsty for? It's thirsty for a relationship with Jesus. That's what it's thirsty for. Doesn't even know it's thirst sometimes, but that's what it's thirsty for. And when it finds water, when it comes to Jesus, it's like all the lights come on and it's like it's all clear. This is not, the thing I thought about, it says just come. This is not a works thing. You know, this is not a works thing. I thought even when we get a bit dry, those of us that know Jesus, and we let ourselves get a bit dry, it's not a works thing. It's not, okay, we're going to have 3 days of prayer and fasting, and I'm going to get yous all here because I'm gonna crack a whip up here or something because we're going to get yous all guzzling or drinking or, you know what I mean? It doesn't work like that. Jesus says, come to me. Come to me. It's an invitation. It's not a works thing. It's before anything else. It's an invitation to know him, to fellowship with him, to have relationship with him. It's just like that other famous invitation. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Any weary and heavy laden experiences you've had? Where did you find rest? You found rest when you kind of gave up or just, you know, you didn't keep trying to flog this thing or work at this thing. I bet you your success came when you simply came to the foot of the cross or you came to Jesus or you got down in your chair and made a simple prayer and said, Jesus, I can't do this. I need help. You know, humility and just coming to him. It's Jesus is teaching us the way this all works. It's firstly drinking in. Come and drink. It's receiving. You know, it's out of this well that we live. It's out of this well that we give out. And we can only give what we've received. Jesus is the source of living water. We must give priority to our relationship with Jesus. All we've got to do is move a little closer, be a little bit more intimate with him, drink a little bit more often. Just come to him. Jesus says, nothing survives without me. You might have come to church today, but have you been coming to Jesus through the week? That's the secret, isn't it? That's the secret of this church exploding with life. That's the key to everything we're longing for, is all of us coming to Jesus daily. He goes on to say, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. What's so exciting about this passage is Jesus says there is even more happening here than just our own thirst being satisfied. Jesus is saying, not only do you get your thirst satisfied, but you yourself are going to become a fountain of living water. I was watching a worship guy last night singing that song, The Goodness of God, that Gwen sang in me. He's an African guy, and he's just singing this song with all of his heart. I can't take my eyes off that guy when he sings that because I feel like I'm drinking at a fountain. You know, it's this people, I mean, I was blessed today, Jazz. I felt like I was drinking at a fountain. You know, people that get in touch with God and drink, there's something not just satisfying them, but it's gushing out of them. Jesus is saying, he invites us to come to him for salvation, for regeneration, to come alive, for our thirst to be quenched. But he's promised that we ourselves can also become a source of living water. This is what Isaiah said. And the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your desire in scorched places and make your bones strong, and you will be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. Is that what you want to be? Come to Jesus and drink, and he'll not just satisfy your thirst, he will make you a fountain of living water. Jesus says, he actually explains what he's saying here. You know, this is so clear. You talk about the baptism in the Spirit, being filled with the Spirit of God, having an experience that's separate to your salvation. This is clear. This is clear. It says, now this he said about the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were to receive. For as yet, you know, these people, they're talking about people who believed, they're believers, and they were yet to receive something more. He says, as yet the Spirit had not been given because Jesus had not been glorified. Heaven hadn't yet held its breath and watched him get out of that tomb. They were waiting for the Spirit of God as well to be poured out. This passage is about the baptism in the Spirit. We need a water thing happening. We need water. We need water. We need water. We don't know how much we need it. We don't know how much we need it. There's an input of water when we get saved. But there is so much more that comes to us through the baptism in the Spirit, through Pentecost. There's an output of water. We need this outflow, this empowerment. We need these rivers of living water. We need the Spirit to empower us not just to live the Christian life, because we do. It's impossible in our own strength, but we need this living water if we are going to minister to others. We cannot give what we do not have. I just wonder if Kim and Jazz or the team, we're going to sing a song at the end here. We cannot give what we do not have. We need the baptism. We need a filling. We need an outpouring into our lives. We need to be filled with the Spirit. It's a river. It's inside us and it's flowing out. The question today is, the question that Jesus asks is, are you thirsty? Are we thirsty? I ask myself that, are we thirsty? Are you thirsty? I just ask you that today. I'm asking myself, are we as thirsty as desperate people in a desert? When Jesus got up to speak, they were remembering their experience in a desert. Are we, like the song Jazz and the team were singing, I Want More? Are we longing for more? More of his presence, more of this river. Jesus says, he that hungers and thirsts for righteousness shall be filled. We've got to long for more. You know, it's like Pete says, you know, there's many ways that we can receive from God. We can ask, we can declare. Well, we've got to long for something. We've got to ask for it. We've got to hunger and thirst for more. We need to be aware of our need for living water. God pours out on a thirsty soul. Sometimes we need to get thirsty. Are we thirsty this morning? Are you thirsty? The enemy of revival, of a church being revived, or for me being more revived, for us all, is satisfaction. We stop being thirsty. We settle for the status quo when God has more. We're in this series, Revive Us. We're in a season of prayer and fasting. And you could sit at home when you've missed a few meals or you've thought there's something better on the TV or something. And you think, you know, why bother? Why worry about this? What we got's pretty good. Why bother? Why go hungry? Why give up an hour in my week or an hour tonight to go and pray? We do it because we want more. We do it because we're thirsty. Because we long for God to pour out his Spirit. That's what we're thirsty for. I've drunk from the well. I've come to Jesus. But I'm thirsty for the outpouring of his Spirit, for those rivers of living water. Just like when I was in Toowoomba and I looked around at those lush fields, those lush paddocks and properties and the greenness, what revived it? It was water. What's going to revive us? It's going to take water. Water revives everything that is dead or dry. Jesus offers us living water to all who come. It's not a works thing. It's an invitation to simply come. There's two things on offer today. There's salvation for any thirsty soul who's yet to come to Jesus. If you're here today, you've never come to Jesus, I invite you, as we sing this song, just move out into an aisle or come up the front. Someone will pray with you. Come to Jesus. He will answer every need you have. He will satisfy your thirsty soul. But also on offer from the King today is a river of living water that can flow out of your innermost being. It's a river that will transform the world wherever you are, in your workplace, in your home, everywhere. It will transform things because you will bring a river of living water. It was poured out after Jesus was glorified. It was poured out on the day of Pentecost. And I tell you, it's on offer today. If you've never experienced the baptism in the Spirit, move, just come out as we sing this song. Come out the front. One of us, anyone, someone else who's had the experience would love to pray for you. The question is, are you thirsty? Because it's free today. If we want more, we only need to ask. We only need to believe in Him. We only need to believe that what He promised, He will fulfill. Simply receive. Let's come and drink. Let's just join me and sing this song. I was singing it in my lounge last night and I kept saying, God, I'm thirsty. God, I'm thirsty. Just could you stand with me and just hear this song? And it goes back. It's only a recent song. Church has been around for 2,000 years. This song's only 20 years old. So it's a new hit on the charts. And it's anyone thirsty. Thanks, guys.